From the Ron McKeefery Podcast Network, I'm Isaiah Castilleja, and this is Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. In this episode, Coach Kreese talks to us about creating a strength and conditioning program from scratch, setting a culture and being an example of that culture, and what it's like to grow up with a parent that is a legend in the strength and conditioning profession. This episode is brought to you by Team Builder. Team Builder is the premier strength and conditioning app for teams and private facilities. Used by more than 2,500 organizations worldwide, performance coaches can write training programs online for athletes to access on their mobile app or where they work out in the weight room view on a tablet. Right now, when you start a 14-day free trial, use promo code CHALK, that is promo code CHALK, to access more than 70 strength conditioning programs directly in your Team Builder account, including 4 sports science questionnaire templates. I'm telling you, great people, great software. Check them out. What's going on, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. We are joined with the head strength and conditioning coach for Chatham State College. He has been at that position for 7 years. And we're going to go into, you know, what it's like to be, you know, the first strength coach of your program and what it's like to build that culture. So we have Coach Kreese on here, EJ Kreese. Walk me through, you know, what it was like to be the first strength conditioning coach at Chatham State College, and, you know, like the culture you look to build and the type of leadership you're looking for.
Yeah, no doubt. Just from knowing you from, you know, previous talks and over the past couple of years being good friends, we had somewhat of a similar route of being the first going in to develop the strength and conditioning program, as well as essentially develop the first role of having a head strength conditioning coach and what that really entails. So I got here in Chatham in 2014, as soon as I finished playing my college ball from Western State inside the conference. A very unique experience because I was the first ever strength and conditioning graduate assistant. And that was the title that they gave me. But although I was a graduate assistant, there was no head strength conditioning coach. So it really kind of presented some great obstacles and a really good learning experience from that. So initially I started working with men's basketball and football. I think once some of the sport coaches also realized that, you know, didn't know everything, but somewhat did know what I was doing, and I would bring my best to those athletes I was working with. So I think I was able to be higher utilized through reaching out for some different sport coaches, and then slowly just really started inheriting every sport team that we had. So by the end of my master's, I was working with all 13 NCAA teams that we had and trying to develop that program and culture for each one of those. Once I finished with my master's, very fortunate that I got to stay here, plant some of those roots, and was hired on in 2016 as the first ever head strength conditioning coach here at the college. Since then, started to develop a staff underneath us with graduate assistants, coaching assistants, working towards a full-time, and really just kind of loved every minute of getting to set that example or be that culture guy for each of those programs going forward.
Definitely. And you had mentioned you were reaching out to everybody and slowly built up each team. What was it like essentially trying to like sell yourself to, like, hey, softball, I'm first strength coach, trust me with your team and let's build something. Like, how was that endeavor? And then also, you know, talking with the administration, I'm sure you had to talk to admin and be like, hey, I know you just brought me on, but we could probably benefit from having a graduate assistant. This is what it takes to at least build the correct way of going about strength conditioning.
Yeah, I'll try to answer that best I can here. I think that, I mean, as well as you know, I think going through undergraduate, getting through master's, the scientific or the application approach, it's always there. The leadership, the textbooks, those things are there. But I do think one of the things that they don't teach very well, one of the things even within strength conditioning that they don't talk about very much, is how important communication is, or your communication style. So for me, was really something I learned from my father, was being able to be a chameleon of people. And it's not that you're trying to present something that's not authentic or who you're not, but you do have to be able to talk differently or speak to different people is what they're wanting to hear. What I really mean by that is what we talk about just in the form of what is good communication is that good communication is when the receiver responds as intended. So that means you're going to have to do some things differently depending upon who you're talking to or what sport coach you're approaching. And as the individual or as the strength coach, it is our job to speak on the dynamic from which they understand. So I wasn't trying to present to our women's basketball or volleyball coach that we're going to make weightlifters out of these athletes or these young men or these young women, because they're not here to be weightlifters. It's just something we do along the way of their athletic career. So I really tried to present who I was, what I was trying to bring to the table, and not that we are trying to make them change their play style or practice schedule or their weekly load with how the sport coach thought they'd be feeling come around game day or off season. So I think it was being very authentic, showing that I did have a science-based application approach and that we were trying to use the weight room to get 1,000 small victories, not just that one on game day, that we use this to build people up or build these athletes up, not to test them and break them down.
Like that. That's awesome. Like you said, it's communication is key, man. It's always been a big thing with me too, is you cannot over communicate, just communicate. And the more you're on the same page with everybody, the less headaches you have in the long run. And I know that doesn't eliminate all of them, but definitely it helps out. But so you're there and you're established. You know, if I were to walk in your weight room during one of your lifts with football or any of your teams, you know, what kind of culture would I see, or what kind of culture are you looking to develop amongst your strength and conditioning program?
Awesome. Love anything culture related. So what we talk about as a staff, so before you even hit the floor to come in, is for us kind of a separation of principles and philosophies. So I kind of use those not interchangeably, but a little loosely, I guess I would say that for us, the way we speak to our staff and our athletes is that the principles never change, but the philosophies are always evolving. So for us, the principles of what you're going to see day one, the last training day you have, or you're just popping in for a day. Over the years, I am not a very, I didn't come up with any of these. I absolutely am that person. I steal a little bit from every reference that I have, and then I make my own within that. So this is not my own thoughts. It's probably a little bit of everybody that I've learned from, as well as some Ryan Horn and Matt Shadid, just kind of combining some things that we found that works for us here and what we're looking for. So within that is understanding that the athletes, they reflect what you project. And that comes within a lot of different ways, from positivity or the dialect or tone that you try to use. We also get what we tolerate and emphasize. So within that, there is no culture without consequences. And the way we're able to build that up is through trust and accountability. And that love that we provide to these athletes, it's not conditional or situational. And we are going to be, as a staff, relentlessly positive, unapologetically demanding, and not demeaning. So I think as you come in here, we're a culture-first program because, believe it or not, when those athletes graduate, the sets and the reps, I'm going to forget those things. I wish that it always didn't, but I'm not going to remember Jerry on week 7 off-season protocol, what he squatted on during that day. But I am going to remember who they are as an individual or the relationship that we got to build. So I think very much just kind of adapting our philosophies and principles to try to kind of meet those the best we can. So I don't know if that answered that question there at all.
A lot of good quotes that you dropped right there. And I think it's important. And, you know, working with even my interns or even my staff, it's, I think a lot of times when you're up and coming, you get lost in the X's and O's, but you forget like the big picture of it. I always like to tell my interns and my staff is like, look, I'd rather have a coach that has 100% buy-in and a good culture and a very simple program versus a program that's as scientific as can be, but they lost their team and they can't communicate well. Cause it's, you know, if those athletes are willing to run through a wall for you, I think it's an important thing in what you're building, but you also, I like how you focus on culture because, you know, it's an important thing. And could you, you know, explain a little bit about, you separate the principles from philosophies. How do you go about like separating that? Like, how do you go about focusing on what percent gets this versus what percent gets, you know, your focus on something else?
When I think of that balance, I don't think so much as each of those have a exact percentage of weight, but more just these are ingredients that help us make up the pie. So within that, just being a, I think I stole this from Matt Shadid at a conference at Colorado State last summer, but talking about becoming a guardian of the standard, regardless of the purpose. So as we go back to kind of that question on principles, for us, it's not just from a coaching standpoint, or at least for me, that's not. It's who I am as a person. It's what I try to present authentically to the athletes, to my friends, to my family, to those closest to me. It's really just kind of the underneath the skin, what am I about? Those things that are not going to change. So for me, understanding that in my mind, they reflect what you project. So knowing that that is true for me to my core. So how I pick my words, to my tone, to my body language, those are all going to hopefully be speaking the same message. So the principles for us is kind of our core of who we are, and those are non-negotiables for us. Our philosophies on the back end, those are kind of everlastingly adapting, if that's even kind of a word to throw in there. But it's for us, it's training methodology, right. Up to date, the science principles, the application process. So for us, as we look for the next block coming up or what we want to do in season coming this year for football, as we sit down as a staff, we're not just going to copy and paste last year. But we're also not going to start from scratch. So for us, I know we're going to touch on it here a little bit with that Pareto principle, really understanding what we do and why, and making sure all of those philosophies try to align for this year's goals or what the sport coach wants for their goals as well. Because if our goal is one and the sport coach is different, then we're never going to have the best outcome, and we might also leave some buy-in on the table versus having one message type thing going all the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the Pareto principle. Could you go in a little bit more about that and how it helps you decide what your programming looks like?
Yeah, so for us, trying to really answer that question of what's the one biggest change from this year versus the previous or something we've tried to implement. Don't know where we heard this, if this came from the Feed the Cats that's been popular recently. If it came from Trevor down in Colorado Mines with that brain he has. But for us, how we try to implement this is following the Pareto principle, which essentially is find the 20% and eliminate everything else. So if you look into that, just trying to kind of break it down to how we apply it, is that understanding that roughly 80% of the effects are going to come from 20% of the causes. So that's also, you know, a form, I guess, of essentialism, understanding that it's a detailed approach to less. It's not just pulling things out and hope you become better, but it's having a scientific, detailed approach to do less so that we get more. And one of our number one sayings that I love here is that we do the simple things savagely well. So rather than doing a lot of things pretty good, which I think we did for a lot of time here, athletes could handle a lot of different exercise selection. We did most things very well. But if you said, hey, what's the 20% that you do great? What's something that you do savagely well? That really became our entire program through last year, that we find the 20% that we know that works, that we believe in. We also know how to coach, and we're going to get rid of everything else and focus on what we can do great.
I think that's about as good advice as you can give, is just keep it simple, know what you can coach, know what works for you, and just focus on it and do it well. Now, is the Pareto principle for you personally, is it blanketed across all teams, or is it like, all right, this is the 20% that worked with football, this is the 20% that worked good with men's basketball? How do you go about that?
That's a great question. I think that one of the biggest mistakes as a strength coach we can make at any point throughout our career is being married to an exercise. So it's not a blanket statement, or it is a statement, I guess, that we follow through our teams, but it's not a blanket approach, if that kind of makes sense there. So it's not, as you said, this is the 20% that works for football. That might be completely different than women's basketball dynamic or a softball or wrestling program. So it's really trying to make sure for each one of those sports or individuals within that program, that for those individuals or that specific sport, we're finding that 20%. So it's definitely not something that we just say, hey, the trap bar is great, every team's going to follow that 20%, because it's very different depending on how we train the team or exercise selection that we've used. So it's not a blanket approach, but it is trying to make sure every team follows in line with this training methodology or how we come about it as coaches.
That's great stuff. And I think it's really applicable and really easy to follow. And it's efficient, you know, it's not fluff. It really works. And I want to go into a little bit, 'cause you, you're big on culture, and everything you're saying makes great sense on culture. So your name is Earl Kreese the Fourth, correct?
Earl Joseph Kreese the Fourth.
Proud lineage. Yeah, right there. Absolutely. So, and I always see that in your emails, like you see the four. Now, EJ Kreese the Third is your father, but he goes by another name, but that a lot of coaches should know by the name of Doc Kreese. So you are the son of a legendary strength coach of Doc Kreese. And I've known about, you know, Doc for a long time because I worked at the University of Colorado, and I'm big on coaching trees and lineages and who was like around before me and who got there. And
Appreciate that. And plus,
you know, I grew up in Colorado like you, so I know who CU was. And then once I became a strength coach, I made a point of emphasis to know all the head strength and conditioning coaches that have ever been in the state of Colorado. So Doc Kreese is a easy one to figure out. What, I mean, your dad was at, you know, Middle Tennessee State, Vanderbilt, CU, and UCLA, correct?
Yes, sir. And then did some Olympic athletes and rehabilitation following UCLA.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, like, your dad's a legend. So what is it like, to grow up in the weight room, essentially? Like, how much did your dad, who he was, impact you and become like the man you are today?
I will take any opportunity to brag on my pops and how I got to grow up. First off with that, it's not trying to use that reference of fill big shoes. There's not a chance of that. Mm-hmm. It's like taking a little kid, giving him a pair of Shaq shoes and saying, hey, good luck when you go play. I am not by any means going to be able to surpass that man, but he has set one heck of a level and being my hero through that. Mm-hmm. So being a second generation strength coach, we touched on a little bit before, but we're within a field or an era specifically that it's not a very old position, or that it's also kind of constantly evolving, that the godfathers of strength conditioning are our parents' age. They are really not generations removed.
Right.
So I'm very fortunate to get to grow up how I did and have kind of the background and outreaches through coaches that I just met growing up and thought that was normal, and now are in very big time roles, which is awesome. But for me, growing up in the weight room, I think a lot of people preface like, yeah, I grew up in the weight room. My dad took me a lot over to 24-hour fitness. Like, no, like, I fucking grew up in the weight room.
That's like, man.
Exactly. Like, my memory of riding a bicycle, no training wheels, is my dad 3-2-1 letting go across the Olympic platform at the Dow Ward Center in Colorado. Back when those were raised up feet above.
They were.
I literally grew up inside of the weight room. And that's such a unique experience of getting to see some of the highest level athletes train, going to multiple running groups as a little kid, not knowing any better than that you're not supposed to hop in or do some of those things. So I think I had a childhood experience that is really second to none. And I don't think that could ever be replicated through the things I got to experience growing up in that, with mainly those memories stemming from Colorado.
Yeah, man, that was pretty cool. Cause like I said, I researched the heck out of, like, when I was at Colorado, I knew who Doc Kreese was, and I saw pictures of him at Dahl Ward and all that stuff. And then once I found out who you were and you were telling me like all your memories, I was like, dude, like, EJ was literally like playing around in the same weight room. Cause when I first got to Colorado, like, it, not much has changed. Like, the new Champion Center, everything is like very different now, but when I got there, it was almost literally on the same stuff was still around, from when your old man was there, like the raised platforms and stuff. So I was like, man, this is like surreal. But, you know, how much did your dad help you out? Like, when you started this out, like, did he give you any pointers? Like, hey, you know, here's what it's like to work with the head football coach, or here's what to expect when you're dealing with knucklehead athletes or anything like that.
I think more than anything, it's actually, it's kind of funny looking back, because I've never had that specific question kind of asked to run through those thoughts. But I think more than anything, my dad gave me advice to be a godly man more than he did career advice. So nice. Within that, he wasn't making calls on my behalf. He wasn't getting a hold of Coach Long here, athletic director here at Shadron. Hey, my son's going to get into this. He'd be a great fit for you. Well, maybe that would have helped at some point if I would have asked, but, you know, I'm very happy, very blessed with my route.
Right.
So more than anything, I think his advice of being true to yourself, being true to being a godly man, and being able to be confident with how you present that both in life and to your athletes. So I think more than anything, just looking back on it, was making sure he instilled in myself the belief that when you have the background, when you've put in the work, that you need to have that belief in yourself to have your chest up. And it's okay to be nervous. But when you have those feelings, it's your job to make sure you put those down and you present the most authentic, real version of yourself to those in front of you. So I think he really instilled that, being a chameleon. You could put me in a room with anybody from California down through the coast all the way to Florida, and I'm going to find a way to interact. I'm going to find a way, if you're a recruit, to sell you that message of Shadron. So I think he instilled that so much more than sets and reps or tempo times that were secret to CU or those things. Right. So I'm just very proud of the man he raised me to be.
No, that's awesome. I think it's important. Like, I'm trying to remember when we were talking, when I realized, I was like, shoot, this is the son of like Doc Kreese. Like, I don't remember when that specifically was, but I think it says a lot about your character and what your dad instilled in you. Cause like, you could easily have a huge head and use your dad's legendary status to be somebody or not, but you're like, you're just a great down to earth coach. And I think that's important. I mean, it's rare. Like I said, I talked with a few other coaches, and we could name only two other, like you and one other coach that we knew of that was like a legacy. And like you said, it's a process of like, you know, the first strength coaches being in the 60s and 70s are barely our parents' age. So I guess what's next for Shadron State College, you know, strength conditioning? Ooh. Like, what are you looking to take all your culture and all your experience that you've had and the guy you and the coach you become? What's next? Like, where do you want to take this?
First thing's finding out, do we get to have a competitive season here coming up? I think that's right. The first part.
Right. Right.
Heard you say this. I think it's kind of been big. I don't want to say lately, but since we've kind of both spoken with Gage Rozier the past couple of years, is that make it big time where you're at. And it's not about the logo on your chest or the logo on your hat. It's making a big time where you coach now, today. And you could have every goal, every dream in the world, but can you say every night that you're also working towards those things? Are you leaving it better than you found it?
Right.
So asking for us, I mean, what's next is obviously we all hope for upgrades. We hope for health and safety of our athletes. I think it's trying to have a higher focus on communication and leadership, not within so much the staff, but leadership, with how we connect the weight room to those individuals from those teams or those sports. The learning, what are their goals? How do they want to make them happen? How do they imagine those things playing out? What they're willing to sacrifice for those goals? And are they sure? So I think it's more of the leadership and communication focus than it is sets and reps, as well as, I'm going to throw this in real quick, sub B is build our staff to be better taken care of. So I think, as well as you know, that's one of the bigger pushes at the Division II level in some situations or some schools. So I hope to, our staff works their tail off. Our assistant, Chase McClendon, does everything he can. And I hope that we can take care of him in a better way moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's clutch. I mean, you're only as good as the people you keep around you. And we ask a lot of our assistants and our interns.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's good to take care of them. And my big thing is, like, I just want to, if I could help one other coach make it out of the volunteer ranks and, you know, try to get them, show them that you can build the life, you can be normal, like strength coach normal, like you can, you know, hopefully have a career here. And I see it too much on the other end when, you know, this career is tough, man. Or you're like, you go volunteer and it just doesn't work out. And then we lose potentially a good strength coach just because we, you know, can't find something to help them make things happen.
It is not an always easy start. And Coach Mick, our assistant, and I were actually talking this morning about just the culture of strength and conditioning from a Shadron perspective. Mm-hmm. That outside of myself, we have from Shadron, Mel Hurl, that's over at Colorado, down in Colorado Springs. Dylan Furrier helped us on the football side as an assistant at Arizona State. Oh, sorry, there Arizona. He's going to be mad at that. Arizona. TJ Aniston down at Lamar. So we're slowly starting to build our tree out for people coming from here. And I think this speaks volumes on the program you have, because a lot of success definitely helps get you a job, but also recognizing the person behind it doing a free internship, trying to get another internship or a GA spot. Right. It's not the easiest sell, but we found some people that have found a passion. So I hope that we've helped light that fire and not just extinguish it out.
Yeah, that's important. And one last question, so we can I won't take too much of your time, is, you know, if you could pick up the phone and call EJ Kreese from 6 years ago, what would you tell him?
Oof. I got two here.
Okay.
First one, at just strength coaches in general, especially during their career, learn how to manage your money.
Oh, yeah.
So what's one of those things? Maybe going back financially, just being a little more aware or grown up from that age versus where I try to be now. So financially, as a young strength coach, take care of your business. However that Marshawn Lynch quote is, take care of y'all chicken. Just take care of yourself financially. But I think from a career aspect is that sets and reps or the weight room isn't everything. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of my biggest mistakes, was mentally correlating success or strength in the weight room to perceived success out on the field or the sport or the event that those athletes are in. Mm-hmm. That the weight room is not a means to an end, that they're here to play their game or their sport or do their event. They're not here to lift weights.
Right.
So I think coming in early in my career, weights was everything. And if you didn't die hard, you weren't fully believing that this is make or break for your athletic career, then you weren't the exact best fit within our program or culture. I think I put way too much percentage or affluence mentally on what the numbers in the weight room mean versus recognizing the person and the athlete behind it. And ultimately, if they're not getting better or succeeding more in their sport or reducing the injury rate within that sport, like, what are you doing? How are you really spending that hour? So I think it's instilling more of that process of the person, not the sets and the reps early on in my career.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great stuff. And I'm hearing money more and more from a whole bunch of different coaches. Like, you just got to educate yourself and manage it, because it affects you, you know, 10 years down the road, 5 years, even 5 years down the road. So I think that's important. And then the weight room isn't everything. Like, I think it's good to have a good appreciation for the fact that they're not weightlifters. They don't love the weight room as much as us. And it's just part of what it takes to be a really good athlete and, you know, compete at a high level. So I think that's important. So no, I appreciate you being on, Coach. Like, I have a lot of respect for what you've been building out there at Shattering State and everything you've done for the community. And if our listeners wanted to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can find you on either social media or contact you for follow-up questions?
Yeah, I appreciate that opportunity. Very open to anybody ever wanting to reach out, vague, specific, general, small, anything in between. Email is also posted on our athletic website, but it's ekreese@csc.edu. That is ekreese@csc.edu. Easier one even than that is Instagram. That's the only social media platform that I use. Believe it or not, I don't have this ball and coach something name. It's under my name, EJ Kreese. So it's EJKREIS. Feel free to shoot any messages, anything about that. But more than anything, Coach, wanted to thank you for reaching out. A lot of respect for how we came up throughout our 7-8 years here at the Division II level.
And absolutely.
Having the opportunity that you wanted to talk shop for a minute, I think it gives me a little bit of a jump here in my seat, because I know that we talk a lot behind the scenes, but it's been awesome here to get to actually throw something together for a podcast. A lot of respect your ways for what you're doing.
And absolutely. And thanks for, like you said, carrying that standard. Like, you know, just because, you know, we're at the D2 level doesn't mean like our cultures and our weight rooms aren't, you know, to the highest standard. And I appreciate you doing that. And we'll get you up on some follow-up stuff. And, you know, we'll definitely be posting this here soon. And, you know, thanks for your time, Coach.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Play. Play is a company that I've personally been working with from the start. Everyone at Play works to help strength coaches innovate and find solutions for our profession. From flooring, weight room equipment, outdoor spaces, and everything in between, Play will collaborate with you to find what you need. They work with everyone from professional teams to high schools, and they've always made me feel important and a part of the Play family. Refuse second best with Play. Find them at play.us and let them know Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0 sent you. Thanks everyone for listening. Thank you to our great guests for taking the time to share their experiences. Thank you to Play and Team Builder for being great companies that help our profession. And most importantly, thank you, the listeners. Please find us on social media at Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0. Find our show notes on wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a rating, comment, and subscribe. And don't forget to say hi. It's great to hear from coaches from around the country. Talk to you all next week on another episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk 2.0.